welcome everyone to our program. We call it, it's a brand new ball game, OER and Publishers in 2018. And over the next 30 minutes, and we'll do this at a fairly brisk pace, we're going to find out how developments advancing open educational resources, OER, can and will impact your publishing program and what you can do to respond. Joining us will be a leading policy consultant in education, publishing, and technology. And we're going to go into the impact of a set of laws that are coming into force in Texas that are likely to move the state and publishers who sell into the Texas market closer than ever to an OER field of play. We'll learn about some legislation out of Austin that requires information about OER in textbook planning, textbook purchase planning, double state funding for OER development, and encourages professors and others to put OER materials in their classrooms. If Texas were alone in this, that might be one thing, but just a few weeks ago in Washington, the U.S. Congress followed suit, authorizing an open textbook grant program. Oh, this is an opportunity to understand the issues around OER that affect you and will affect you soon. The program is being brought to you by Copyright Clearance Center. Many of you are familiar with Copyright Clearance Center, a global leader in content management, licensing, discovery, and document delivery solutions, who are relationships with those who use and create content, relationships that go back nearly four decades. CCC drives market-based solutions that fuel research, power publishing, and respect copyright. Ixis is one of our subsidiaries. The other is our Netherlands-based subsidiary Rights Direct, but Ixis, based in London, is a leading global provider of information solutions that reinvent the way organizations derive value from data and content to drive growth. The Ixis publishing platform delivers a suite of authoring, enrichment, discovery, reuse, and delivery that's designed to address current and future content development and management challenges. Our special guest today, joining us on the line from Washington, is Jay Diske. Jay Diske, welcome.
Hello, Chris. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we're looking forward to chatting with you. We'll tell people briefly about your background. Jay Diske is principal of Diske Public Affairs, which provides communications and government relations services in the areas, policy areas of education, publishing, and technology. Prior to launching Diske Public Affairs in 2017, Jay Diske served as executive director of the Association of American Publishers Pre-K through 12 Education Division. Earlier, he held senior communication positions in the Office of the Secretary at the U.S. Department of Education and on the U.S. House Representatives Committee on Education and the Workforce. So eminently qualified to tackle this topic, which is as much about publishing as it is about policy. And I guess that's where we'd like to start on all of this, Jay. I gave the top headlines in the developments in Congress and in Texas. Expand on that for us. Perhaps we can lead with the federal funding that's just come through. What looks like a small amount, but what we know about federal funding is it may start small, but it always gets bigger.
Indeed, Chris, it seems to be a habit here in Washington, D.C., for good or bad. The $5 million in funding came about due to, quite frankly, many years of pressure from a number of different advocates seeking to lower the price of college textbooks. And what has been created here, and it, by the way, was created in the big omnibus funding bill that the president signed into law in March. It's a very small program, $5 million, but it will fund open textbook grant programs at the post-secondary level. There will be a grant application set up. So that's a federal development, and we'll go in a little deeper into some other federal developments in just a moment.
Right, but that is, as we said, just really an indication of the growing momentum around all of this, and Texas has done a lot to drive that. The legislation itself was passed in Austin in 2017, but it's now taking force here in 2018 and really adding considerable force to the movement towards OER in that very important state where there are, I think, 5 million students enrolled.
Indeed. It's very symbolic of some of the recent OER activities in the states. And this one received a lot of notice, Chris, simply because of the size of the market. And it's a market, as I'm sure some of our attendees know, it's a large state adoption market. Texas is the second large adoption market, California obviously being one of the first. There are essentially 19 adoption states around the country, and Texas and California are the biggest ones. California has had a number of proposals to go into OER, which are open education resources. They have to some degree, but the shift in Texas is very meaningful, and I'll go into just a few more details in a slide or two.
All right. And the point that you have made for me, and as well in a series of blogs that you contributed to Copyright Clearance Center's Velocity of Content series, these blogs, three of them go back to February. We'll provide links for those entries in the follow-up email that everyone will receive. But you make the point that OER is changing in its character, which is that it has moved from the original sense of OER as a kind of onesie-twosie, if I can use that very official-sounding phrase, onesie-twosie contributions to the learning environment to actually fully develop programs of OER material.
Indeed. For those who I'll go over just a real quick bit of history. OER was conceived roughly 20 years ago, and since then has been heavily funded by foundations. If you're not familiar with the term, OER is educational content that once developed is released with an intellectual property license that allows for its free use and repurposing. Initially, as Chris mentioned, it was really pieces, small supplemental pieces, reading lists, small textbooks, and most were put together on digital formats and placed in digital repositories around the country. But that sort of development often missed the real point, which is at the K-12 level, schools want full-blown curriculum programs. Yes, they use some supplemental, but if OER was going to move forward, it would have to move from a smorgasbord of various programs to full-blown curriculum with alignment and many of other aspects.
Right, and as you alluded to, Jay, there's been a kind of an activist community around the development of OER, that activist community driven by some very meaningful, large foundations, and that that foundation money has sort of brought us to a point where we are approaching critical mass. But it's these moves at the state level in Texas and at the federal level that are really sort of getting us to the point we are at in 2018, which is a real sea change.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, why don't we take just a little deeper dive into what has developed in Texas. The legislation that Chris and I talked about came about in the 2017 legislative session, and it was a set of three bills which did a number of things. First of all, one of the bills revises the state's definition of open education resources and allows the Texas Commissioner of Education to use open licensing to encourage school districts to adopt OER. Number two, the legislation doubled to $20 million the amount of state funds allocated for K-12 OER development, and this would be development by the state itself or a contractor. Funds will be used to develop materials and subject areas that make up the bulk of school district purchases. For example, reading, mathematics, science, and social studies, the four subjects that make up the bulk of the purchases. And there's a number of other things that the bill does. I'll just mention one or two other things. It creates a new post-secondary program designed to support and encourage professors to transition to OER. It also authorizes the development of a web portal that will have information about all state adopted instructional materials. Now, having said all that, the Texas market just isn't totally going OER. It's a very large market. I mentioned $20 million for OER development. Well, goodness, in any given year in Texas, there's usually at least $500 million and state funds in play for purchases of instructional materials. But nevertheless, this is very meaningful, and it may very well lead to just further increases over time in state funding for OER development.
And it's a commitment that is driven by what concerns there in Texas. Some of OER commitment has been driven by the need to adopt to the Common Core standards. And as I understand it, Texas has rejected those, but it's got its own set of standards that it's concerned about.
Yeah, it's that's right. Texas does not use the Common Core standards, but the what this has been driven by over in recent years, Chris, is two things. One, a lot of money is spent by the state in supporting instructional materials purchases. I just mentioned $500 million. Really, it's often more than that. It just depends on which adoption one is talking about. And I think that the legislature and the Texas Education Agency is starting to take a very hard look at that number and say, gee, if we just put a little bit of money, $20 million or something like that, into OER development at the state level, could it help reduce our funding costs to the districts? The other impetus behind this is that things are moving more digital. These programs will be developed in digital format and made available from the state or its contractor. The textbooks may be printed, but they'll be printed at low cost, which seems to be one of the things that a number of OER developers are doing now, and I can go into that in a few minutes. But that's the that's really the momentum behind this thing. So Texas is really a state to watch. If you're a publisher or OER developer, or you play in that space in one way or the other.
Right. We are speaking right now with Jay Diske, a leading policy consultant in education, publishing, and technology. If you have a question for Jay Diske as we look at this brand new ballgame of OER and publishers in 2018, please use that chat box in the right-hand corner of the screen and let us know what's on your mind. If you need a clarification or want to add some comments about this very important topic for textbook publishers, do share those with us, and we'll get to as many of those as we can. Now, Jay Diske, you've been talking about Texas and the important role it plays. As you say, that's one of, I believe, was it 19 adoption states around the country. But, of course, the federal government kind of supersedes all of that. And the most recent news, the Open Textbook Grant Program, is only one in a series of steps that the federal government has taken to essentially promote OER.
That is correct, yeah. The Open Textbook Grant Program was just approved in early March, but there have been other developments going back, for a number of years. The earliest, funding of open education resources programs came about through stimulus funding, the education stimulus, which was passed as part of the overall stimulus package as the recession was deepening. And the stimulus funding in one state in particular went to fund something called Engage New York, which was an expansive series of open education resource modules for use in the state. Well, that program has been picked up by a nonprofit organization and repurposed, and it has moved out into other states as well. So that it was a very significant OER development. Another thing that happened just recently was that the U.S. Department of Education, in the final 18 months of the Obama administration, pushed for an open licensing requirement on any content that was developed with a competitive grant from the U.S. Department of Education. That requirement was approved and is now on the books, and so anything developed with a competitive grant, even if a publisher were to receive a grant like that vis-a-vis an educational institution, they would have to openly license that grant in all likelihood. So this is just one of a number of things, and as you can see, momentum has started to build at the federal level.
Right, and as you mentioned, Jay, certainly driving that in Congress has been concerned about textbook prices, and that would lead some to think that OER is about making textbooks free. But there is, of course, nothing free about any of this, and particularly nothing free about OER development. So this raises important questions you addressed in one of your blogs about the sustainability of OER. Can you go into that for us? What are the costs associated, and what are the ways that people are looking at making this sustainable over time?
Right. Well, just as the slide says, there's nothing free about OER development. OER is often thought of as free because it's often freely available, but the development does indeed cost something. The development process for instructional materials is rather intensive. Oftentimes is played out over a year or more. There needs to be an instructional design, very close alignment with standards. Ancillary materials are often developed to support special needs children, gifted students, students needing intervention services, a whole range of things. There's also federal accessibility requirements so that students who are blind and print disabled can use the materials. It's not unusual for a for-profit publisher to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and sometimes more than $1 million on a brand new reading program for a major state adoption. So someone has to fund this development, and what has happened over the last 17 to 18 years is that a number of large foundations here in the United States have decided to begin funding open education resources. So in other words, the foundations are paying for it. Now, is OER sustainable? It's sustainable as long as it has funding, as long as it has foundation funding or funding from governments, state or federal, which we've just talked about. So the sustainability of OER really depends on that sort of funding model. On the other hand, there are some other models that are emerging. One, for example, is the service model, which is the second bullet point on the slide. The idea is to develop free materials and then offer services such as professional development, enhanced digital versions, all around that. The service models that we're starting to see are very interesting. There's a number of groups that are slowly bringing those forward. Some are publishers and some are OER advocates. I can talk about that a little more, Chris, if you would like me to.
Indeed, and you know, you mentioned here some of the ways that, as we sort of promised, we would help to indicate to publishers that OER itself isn't a negative here. There is a potential for opportunity. You mentioned the various kinds of business models around service provisions, but also OER, it can be a foundation for publishers upon which to build their own proprietary materials that either are copyrighted, created by themselves, or licensed from others.
Yeah, that's right. And some of the models that we have seen evolve just over the past several years, for example, and I'll use the name of one or two organizations, if that's okay, Chris. One is an OER organization called Open Up Resources, which is funded by five foundations, has developed K-12 language arts and math curricula that's available for a district to download and use. But in addition, Open Up offers a range of support services such as professional development, enhanced print services, et cetera. We're seeing a number of organizations follow suit in that direction, and we're also seeing, for example, at the post-secondary level, I'll mention one other organization, Lumen Learning, which again, post-secondary, it's received a lot of foundation support over the years. They, however, are also recently received funding, $2.5 million in private equity funding in order to grow its line of not no-cost, but low-cost college courseware programs. And they have different business models where the various services can be attached to those courses. Very interesting model. And so what we're seeing here is not only developments in the policy space, but we're seeing OER developers take a different tack in some cases by offering services while the core of their programs may still be funded by foundations. We're also seeing publishers do the same sort of thing with services, which is keeping their costs or their prices stable or maybe even lower, but then offering enhanced services to sell around their offerings, assessment services, professional development services, data analytics. There's just a variety of things. So, again, the service model is something that OER organizations and for-profit publishers are looking at.
Right. And Jay, all of this is really about this digital environment that publishing exists in today. Really wouldn't be conceivable without it. And you've alluded to some of these things, to data analytics, to the ways that the technology of managing content, tagging content, using metadata to know where a particular asset is, and then be able to include it in a package or a variety of packages. All of these things, and I'm simplifying it greatly, but all of these things are what's really driving OER in this kind of explosion of growth, because these various free materials already out there exist, and they can be then identified, leveraged, recombined into new programs, there really doesn't seem at this point much limit to the business models. It's really up to the imagination of the publisher.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what we will see, or what we've started to see, Chris, is a great deal of experimentation from smaller publishers as well as several major publishers who are looking at the various service models and beginning to introduce them, pilot them in school districts and colleges and universities across the country. OER has sparked an era of experimentation, new innovations. At the same time, there's been, quite frankly, a lot of quality concerns expressed over the years about the actual quality of OER and whether it aligns with state standards. But, however, when you look at the major programs from some of the major producers, what you're seeing is they're bringing on more and more professional staff, oftentimes former publishers, publisher staffs. And I think what we're beginning to see is the sort of quality that is needed to move into districts.
Right. And you mentioned innovation and really sort of experimentation. One of the areas that's grown from experimentation to really sort of greater adoption is the notion of personalized learning. Very briefly, Jay, what's the potential there, and how does OER figure in it?
Yeah, that is a huge question mark, I believe, hanging over all of this. Personalized learning, I'm sure, at least I hope everyone on the line knows what personalized learning is. It's purely digital. And it is, rather than the sort of model where the teacher stands in front of a class and says, okay, everybody, open your textbooks, instead of that, everybody is on a device of some sort, usually a netbook or laptop computer or a tablet. And the student signs on and is walks through a series of lessons. There is analysis, real-time analysis going on electronically while the student does that. And if the student is responding correctly to some prompts, they're taken off to the program takes them to another area where they do some exercises and come back and they're assessed again. So in other words, the student moves at his or her own pace and attains learning objectives along the way. The teacher monitors all of this and determines whether that student needs extra support, either from the teacher or from the program itself. Now, having said all that, you can probably imagine that personalized learning is very expensive. It takes a lot of digital and technology assets, and not all the schools, colleges and universities, are in a good place to provide those assets. There's nearly 14,000 school districts out across our country, and each district is in a different place. Because of that, a lot of schools are still using textbooks. Many are using a mix of textbooks and personalized learning programs and other digital assets, and I think it will continue that way. Again, we are in a disruptive phase of innovation in both education and publishing, and the phase won't end anytime soon. We're seeing a slow evolution.
Well, indeed, and so you mentioned this evolution. Let's look ahead and see whether this evolution, Jay, in your view, might turn into a revolution. Over the next 12 to 24 months, what does your crystal ball say about where this is headed?
Yeah, well, I think, Chris, we will undoubtedly see more state legislation. When states look at something such as the development in California, I look to see some of the developments in at the federal level in Washington, D.C., I think it will serve as an impetus for other states to go in this direction. There's a great deal of pressure in some states over cost, even though many of the state budgets and education budgets have recovered from the recession. It took a good long time to get there, and states are still watching their budgets very, very closely. So I think we will see some state legislation. Adoption developments, I mentioned a little bit about adoptions, and I won't go deeper into that because it's a big, complex topic. But I think when and if a large state such as Texas adopts OER programs, it will send another signal that to other states that there really is a great deal of momentum building for OER adoption. The opportunity for Texas to do that will come next year when there is a large state adoption for some language arts materials. So it'll be very interesting to watch Texas in 2019. Further federal expansion, I think that what we have seen with the Open Textbook Grant Program, the open licensing requirement, as well as the Go Open initiative, are three things at the federal level that speak a certain amount to the ability for the federal government to continue to slowly go in this direction. We'll see. There is one thing that has held the federal government back at the federal level from expanding, at least in the K-12 area, which is there are some federal provisions that say that the federal government will not deal with curriculum matters. And what we're seeing here nudges into that. So we'll have to see where things go. There is no such restriction at the post-secondary level.
Well, Jay Diskey, I want to thank you for that very comprehensive and I think well-paced look at the developments in OER and their impact on publishing, particularly textbook publishers. But it would seem to me, too, that publishers of all kinds of content have an opportunity here because OER allows them to reach into that catalog, if you will, of OER materials and think about ways that they could repurpose it for their own publishing programs. At this point, Jay Diskey, will let you catch your breath for a second and turn to our audience here for questions. If you have a question for Jay Diskey, please use the chat box in the lower corner of the screen. We have time for just one or two. And, you know, when we talk about OER, Jay, we're here. I'm in Boston. You're in Washington, D.C., and we think this is an issue of perhaps most concern in the U.S., and certainly your presentation focused on that marketplace. But is there similar movement, momentum for OER internationally?
Yes or no. It really varies by country. There have been a number of major OER developments in Europe over the past 8 to 10 years. Spain had a large digital OER initiative. Norway, for example. France has planned these. But in most cases, not only in Europe, but in other countries around the world, what has held back OER is lack of broadband. When you take a close look at the French school system or the German school system, there's very little Wi-Fi or very little broadband. In the schools. Here, more than 90% of all schools have robust broadband, which is something that the federal government began to fuel with the E-Rate program, an FTC program passed in the late 90s. So in many ways, there is interest around the world in OER, but because OER frequently starts as digital and aspires to be a digital product, there's not a lot of it used. Now, there is one big exception. The Scandinavian countries are very advanced in technology. So is the Netherlands as well. And you do see a lot of OER use there.
Right. And, you know, Jay, we have one question, probably time for just this last one, asking about some numbers. Always good to do, give some perspective on this. We want to sort of separate the hype from the reality. And so do you have any idea of the market share of OER when it comes to K-12 instructional materials and so forth?
You know, I have not seen a number, and I'm somebody who watches the numbers almost on a daily basis. I did do so now and did so when I was at the Association of American Publishers for 11 years. Despite everything we've talked about here, Chris, the percent of the market that is actual OER curriculum in use, I think is still well under 10%. It's an $8 billion market, and it's impossible to track revenue of sales of freely available materials. I'm sure at some point there's going to be some data on it. Now, one other thing real quick is that there have been surveys showing that more and more teachers, a significant number of teachers, are using more OER in various forms. So I think market share certainly is increasing, but it's just very hard to get one's arms around exactly what it is.
Well, it's a marketplace and a development that we're going to watch closely here at Copyright Clearance Center. We appreciate the great information from Jay Diske we've just heard over the last half an hour. Jay Diske in Washington, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I want to thank my colleague Allison Anderton. Thank all of you on the program for joining us today. We appreciate your interest and look forward to opportunity to work with you. If you have any questions about Copyright Clearance Center and ICSIS and its potential to help you with some of these challenges, please send me an email there, ckeneally@copyright.com. Make it easy on yourself, chriskay@copyright.com as well. And with that, I want to thank everybody for joining us today on our program and look forward to speaking with you again soon. All the best.